Chief DeMarco is online. Chief, are you with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead. Okay.
We don't have a lot tonight, but I do have some runs almost in the last couple months, but I don't think we made it to the meeting last month. In May, we responded to a total of 31 alarms. June, we responded to 25, and so far in July, we've responded to 12, including three structure fires since last Thursday, one in Hudson, the other night on State Street, and then two in Catskill. So it's been a busy start to July already. And I'm sure, as many of you know, our went down for the new ladder truck was a success. I don't know how many of you were able to make it, but it was a great day. We had a real good turnout, and for once, Mother Nature was on our side. So that's really about all we have for the meeting.
Do you know when you're going to hear about the boat grant?
We have not heard anything. I believe we're hoping to hear something here very soon. Nick and I spoke about it briefly the other night. But as of the last time I spoke with him, we still haven't heard anything yet.
Okay. Any questions from the council?
I'm sorry?
I'm asking the council if they have any questions, and I don't see any. Any questions from the public?
No question.
Oh, Claire.
Supervisor
Cousins, sorry.
I was wondering about the amount of alarms that have been going off from Rivertown Lodge, and if we know if there's a cause or is there something that should be done about that. Maybe their system is outdated. It was flagged for me that there was a higher number than usual, almost comparable to Bliss's numbers. So I was wondering if there's any notification from you guys about that.
A lot of what we've had, and I hate to say it, I mean, we went there the other night, but probably the last couple of months or so, we haven't really gone there that often. We were for a while last year going there quite a bit. A lot of times it's either related to cooking or steam from showers in one of the rooms. That seems to happen a lot for whatever reason, most likely due to the placement of the detectors. But it wasn't really on the level of the way Bliss was. The way Bliss was, it was more related to an old, outdated alarm system. We would get a lot of malfunction. Most of what we get at Rivertown Lodge is something's actually set the alarm off. And like I said, most of the time it's either something that's new related to the kitchen or steam from one of the showers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Anyone else with questions for Chief DeMarco? Okay, thank you, Chief.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great night.
You too. Moving right along, Liz York, are you ready?
Hello. I'm always ready, Tom.
That's good.
All right, I'm going to share. Wait, let's see if I remember how to do this. Share my report with you guys. It's not quite as long as usual, but July made it through our first week last week. We had a study stream with campers that had signed up ahead of time, and a lot that were signing up week of. Right as of now, we actually have about 140 registered kids, spanning the ages of 5 to 13. We've actually had more registered since I turned in this report. We've trained up our counselors. We're ready to have a great summer. We've had already kayaking, canoeing, circus, sound walking, camp news. So we're keeping the kids busy. We had a pretty epic game of kickball the other day. So we're having fun, and we are looking forward to continuing that. We have 140 kids registered, and we don't have them all showing up yet. So we're hopeful that as people settle into their summer routines, we'll start to see more kids showing up. So I do know there's a large number of campers going to summer school this summer. So they only get to come for the last 2 hours, but they can come nonetheless. So, and there's just photos of what we've been doing. The rest of my part is just kind of dedicated to Oakdale. There's been a lot of questions and confusions. So these are the hours. The park is open during daylight hours. I don't access it. We are running camp from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. every weekday from July 5th to August 12th. And that is a time that we ask that, the public use it sparingly. We try to keep the trail open and back so people can travel. We're not necessarily talking people walking through with dogs, but we do ask that. Beach not to use. We have campers on the playground for basketball court, all of that. So the public swimming hours this year are Monday through Friday, 3 to 6, and Saturday, Sunday, 10 through 5. I'm going to speak more about that in the next slides. So just some people asking about why they can't access the park. We are working with minors. We are responsible for these children and their safety, and we do a lot of training, fingerprinting, background checks for the staff that are there working with them, and we can't screen everybody who comes into the beach, so during those, or into the park. So during that time, we ask, for the safety and protection of the kids that is used sparingly by the community in certain areas. We ask them not to use at all. Most community members that come in and hear that are very respectful. They find out the hours, and they come back when they can. This year, there is a lifeguard shortage throughout the entire nation, and specifically in New York State, and that has affected us at Oakdale. There are some state parks that are being closed on days when they were never closed in the past, and it's just reality. People couldn't get retrained during COVID. They've gone to different careers, and so it is a struggle. For the safety of the kids, again, we ask that people not use the beach when they're swimming. We are still in four separate groups so that they have their own time at the waterfront, and that is still, again, mostly a COVID precaution. If one group has a camper that tests positive, we only have to shut down one, or we also quarantine one group because the other groups aren't using the beach at the same time or actually programming at the same time. So we are rotating through those four different time slots for the safety and the health and well-being of the kids. Can you just go back to that slide for a second? I want to make sure I didn't miss. So, again, when the lifeguards aren't there, kind of getting back to that point, it's just not safe to swim without them. And additionally, the Columbia County Department of Health that monitors the use of the beach has already given the city a warning about public swimmers using the beach outside of guarded hours. And it states that should that continue, there might end up being citations for individuals or for the city, and that could result in fines, and that might affect our access in full. So, next slide. Frequently asked questions, will we go swimming without, we've always gone swimming without guards. It's not a question, but it's still something we have to address daily. Yes, people have always swim when the guards aren't there, and yes, it's always been against the rules when it's been done. Again, the main reason is safety. If a swimmer needs help without a guard present, the result could be disastrous, and we might not even know that that's happened. So again, the Department of Health regulates the beach and it's issued a warning, and we need to make sure that we're being respectful of those expectations. Next slide. So again, why don't we just hire more guards? There is a lifeguard shortage. We did a training. Friends of Hudson Youth has funded our lifeguard training for the past few years. We offer training in the community. I mentioned it a few times on these meetings that we're going to have training. And we still only ended up with we've got 9 guards on staff, and of those guards, we still have some that are very young, and for the parents, they're only allowed to work a certain amount of time. So our guards are trying their best. They're there as much as they can be there. And again, they're also human. If they have to call for a day out or they're not feeling well, something comes up, we need to, we need to be staffed appropriately. So why don't we just change the expectations and let everybody swim during camp? Again, it's a safety thing primarily, and our long-term goal is to find a way to allow the public to use camp during camp hours in a way that keeps campers safe and allows for a separation of public beach goers and campers. And again, the way they're set up right now, it is just there's a lot of safety and well-being and COVID expectations that are in place still. And so we are discussing several options that we want to implement. Good news. For those of you that have been coming regularly, you know we've been searching for a program coordinator for a long time. Finally hired Hudson Oaks' own Nakira Roach. She started the position like a week or so before camp started. Nakira grew up attending the youth center in her younger days before moving into a counselor position with the department. Most recently, she worked with the Mental Health Association, and we're just like, so excited to have her with us. A wealth of experience and knowledge, and she's already started to be a lot of fun and meaningful opportunities for the kids at camp, and we're excited to see how that carries over into sports programs and after school program. I have her email address here, and I will do an email to all the council members introducing us to Kira this week.
It was a great addition.
Yeah, really excited. And that's all I have for you. Thank you.
Liz, is there somewhere where someone can find out if there's, without going to the beach, that there's a lifeguard on duty or not? Is there an online?
Yeah, we're trying to put it on all of our social media. There's now an Oakdale page.
Okay.
We're trying to let the city know when we have to shut down, but they can't always update the work. But there's a new Oakdale Beach Instagram we're trying to do all the updates on, so people can go about sharing that.
Any questions from the council members? What's that?
Vicki has
a
hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. Vicki. Go ahead, Vicki.
Yes. Hello. Hi, Liz. How are you doing?
Hey, Vicki. Good. How are you?
Good. So from the 125 registered kids, how many are attending and how many counselors do we have corresponding to those kids?
So we have enough counselors on site every day to meet the Department of Health expectations if all those kids show up. So it's for the younger kids, it's like 10 to 6, like they're 10 to 1, so it's like for every 10 campers there's the staff. And then for the older kids, it's 12 to 1. Staff are always there. It has honestly been so inconsistent from day to day. Like one day we had over 20, one day we had, like in one age group we had about 20, and then the next day that age group we had about 15. But the older kids especially, it's difficult because a lot of the older kids are in summer school, so in the morning we'll have about 12, and then in the afternoon we have about 20, but there's also like 30 signed up for that age group, so.
Did you ever have a standby list for from registered kids? Were there any that were trying to get in and they couldn't? I was just wondering.
Yeah, we pulled a lot of the standby families and allowed them to be in. We still have families that are calling. And so there's a weird balance of we want to let the people that are calling in because they're calling and we know they're going to show up. And we let them in and then all of a sudden everyone decides to show up on the same day.
Yeah.
So we're trying to find that best balance of like letting people, we're still registering, we're registering people today.
Definitely hard if there's no consistency, if they, you know, the kids don't show up the same thing. So if we spoke of, I mean, we had some emails, if you don't mind reiterating why we cannot, they cannot park on the upper Oakdale, please, so everybody understands that.
Yeah, there's no parking signs up by the playground in that area. That's a pull-off area. I know sometimes people park there. It's typically an access space for the access road, and we have to access that road daily to do park maintenance. So we're going in there to empty trash. We're delivering meals every day. We have to do porta potties through that road. And so it was just consistently blocked, and we just had to put up the signs so that we can Mark.
Great. Thank you so much. Yes.
Thank you, Ricky.
Anyone else from the council? Excuse me. Public, any questions for Liz?
No question.
Supervisor Cousins.
It's piggybacking off of your comment. I'm just wondering if you guys have plans for like an infographic or public notification around what you were talking about with when there's a lifeguard off duty, that they're, the city is at, you know, a place where citations could be given out. There's something that could go out to the public so they're aware that that's being closely monitored now.
I mean, we've been trying to get it out on the city page on Instagram and stuff, but I'm not sure the best way to get that information out to everybody else. Maybe we could write something up and send it to the board. But trying to, and hoping to be better ways to communicate that out for sure.
Yeah, I think like a colorful infographic and then just making, asking people to share it on all the community boards so it doesn't look as formal as your regular notices and it's more eye-catching might be helpful.
Okay. Yeah, we can definitely work on something like that and get it out. So we'll ask the public to share it. I try to stay off the community boards because they're not always very friendly. So we'll get it out there somehow.
Anyone else with a question? Okay, thank you, Liz.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Nia does not seem to be here, but Heather is. Heather. Are you ready? Heather, are you there? You're muted if you are there.
Hello.
There you go.
Sorry, I had a couple conflicting things going on in my PC, so can you all hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. So let me see if I can share my screen or whether I have the same issue that Liz had. Looks like I'm okay, so. Okay. So, most of this is just a continuation on the things that we've been discussing for the past few months. In terms of the financial reporting, we did file the 2021 draft AUD, and with OSC, there are still components that are missing. And I've been in communications with both OSC and our fee accountant to make sure that those are completed, and I anticipate the final to be filed by the end of the month. This is largely driven by the fact that GASB 84 eliminated the trusted agency fund. I know that doesn't mean anything to any of you, but the it was a lot of work, and I'm not sure for what purpose. And we had a little trouble with our 2020 auditors understanding what things had to stay in what's called the new TC fund. So we started on basically everything a little later than we should have, but it's all good, and we're interacting with OSC, and I just got a couple things done today, so I really anticipate that being completed and filed by the end of the month. We spoke before about the fact that a bond or bond anticipation notes. We have to put together an official statement. I sent out the one that we did for the 2021 bond to everybody several months ago. I sent out the one for the 2022 ban that we just closed. I sent out to all the council members today, so you should have a record of that. And you know, I personally just think it's a really interesting read because it's a snapshot of basically anything that anyone might be interested in investing in the city would want to know. So it's a range from, it's not just city finances, also, you know, economic development things and other, you know, other types of financial information that are not generally reported, like tax collection rates and things like that. So, you know, I recommend it as fun and entertaining meeting for all of you. We are about to start the 2021 audit. Obviously, we have to finalize the AUD first, but we're already in touch with the auditors and starting to provide them basic documentation for the official outside auditor, the audit of financial statements. And that has to be done by the end of the year in order to meet our requirements. Emma, just the electronic municipal market, just where we have to provide certain information because we are now offering public bans and bonds for purchase. There's a whole bunch of requirements around it. Last but not least, and this kind of ties to the whole issue about the AED, not only do we have to change wording to accommodate GASB 84, but we also have to physically change the general ledger, and for a variety of reasons that are probably too complicated to explain, we can't, we haven't been able to do it yet, and most of that has to do with the fact that they can say that they're eliminating the fund, but if we've got a bank account associated with that fund and there's still cash in that fund, we can't pretend like we moved the cash last year, but it's still sitting in the bank account. So all of that work still needs to be done to get the general ledger fully in compliance with GASB 84, but I'm very hopeful that we're going to get that completed by the end of this quarter, certainly before the end of the year, but hopefully before the end of the year. So we talked about the ban and the financing. So we did have a successful sale of all $8.4 million that we were looking to borrow. Unusually, we sold it, that was unusual for the city. We've only done a couple of bans and bonds. But this time we actually sold it in two lots, and that's because the absolute lowest interest rate was from Greene County Commercial Bank at 2.97%, but they only bid for $1 million of debt. So you don't have to say, I'll take all the debt. Say how much debt you need to take on. But because they had the lowest net interest rate, they come first, which left a remainder of $7.4 million, which came at an interest rate of 4%, but there's a thing called a premium, which is basically money they give you, which you then hold on to and use to help pay back the interest when you owe the interest to them at the end of the year. So net, it's a yield of 3.97%, and that's to Piper Sandler. Quite a bit difference in terms of the interest that we're going to owe on this ban versus the other. Obviously, part of it is because the first ban in 2021 was only about $3 million, and this is $8 million, so it's almost three times as high. But interest rates are, they're very good interest rates for this time. We're actually pretty pleased at what they came in at. But nonetheless, on $8 million, 3% interest is like $260,000. So that's the interest we're going to have to pay, and we address the ban in 2023, so you will see that number in the 2023 budget. I just left the list of projects here as a reminder of what that money is going for, and again, as a reminder, for everything except for the acquisition of the ladder truck,
all return.
Some or all of that amount of money is going to be reimbursed either through some sort of grant, whether it's for water distribution, it'd be a WIA grant, wastewater treatment is going to be a WQIP grant, all of which have been approved. And then CSO, we've got several grants that will wipe, I think, almost all of that out. And then Promenade Park and DRI connectivity are both covered by the DRI grants. So again, that's one of the reasons why we're doing the short-term borrowing, because once we're able to, get the reimbursements, get the grant reimbursements back, and lower the amount of debt on all of these, we'll have a much smaller number that we will then be able to bond over whatever the, it's called the PPE, whatever the expected life of the particular project is. I didn't change anything here. I just kept this on because it goes with the rest of the capital projects, and NYCHA streetlights and ADA improvements. I know they're working on the revision for the city hall thing as we speak. I'm not sure when that's going to be due. Michael Hoffman might actually know the answer to that.
Soon.
And what was that?
Soon, I hope.
June. Okay, soon, yeah. I thought you said June. I'm like, yeah, no, that doesn't happen. the 2021 work list snapshot. Unassigned fund balance is approximately $2.76 million. Nothing that is going on in terms of the final modifications that we have to make to finalize the AUV is going to change that number substantially, so that's all good. And we did just this week receive notification confirming that our second chance of ARCH money is basically on its way, so we're just keeping an eye out for that. But that will be coming soon. So that's great. So in terms of some of the revenues that we track on a regular basis, you can see that, so these are actuals through June, so that's basically 50% of the year. And you can see that for total parking, we're in pretty good shape on across all of them, both versus the budget. At net, we're 53% of our budget for the year, so we're pretty much right on track. We're a little bit less on versus a year ago, but that's because for Front Street Municipal Block, we made a very conservative budget estimate. So I think we're going to be absolutely fine on all of those. So the first chart there just shows you the total 2021 actual for the whole year, the budget for the whole year, and where we are year to date. So that's what you want to do in comparison to where we are year to date for the year, so 50%. So we're right in target there, so that's good. The second littler chart just shows you where we were year to date, so through June in 2021 versus where we are through June in 2022. And you can see that we're basically flat. And that's because some increases in on and off street parking, Front Street Municipal Law, and other types of parking permits are all a little higher and helping to offset some lower big ticket revenue versus where we. The one other thing I will mention about the Front Street Lock, I did go back, I went back to check 2019, because obviously 2020 is when we started seeing the impact because people weren't commuting into their jobs in the city anymore. Some people weren't necessarily coming out there anymore, so we saw a pretty significant dip in that in 2020 and also in 2021. I did look back at 2019, and I think year to date in 2019 for the Front Street a lot, we were at about 132,000. So still, you know, significantly behind where we were at sort of its peak, and it'll be interesting to see to what extent it ever recoups to that level. I suspect it won't, you know, because people are working from home more, and that's becoming a regular thing. But you never know. So in terms of building permits and fees, again, you can see that both plumbing permits and building permits are pretty much on target, both versus budget and versus year ago. So those are all trending nicely. And you can see that we are up a little bit, about 18% in total versus where those two numbers were at through June of 2021. But since we're pretty much right on target for the year-to-date numbers, it just shows that we have a little budget as well in 2022, nothing substantial. So this next thing is going to be a new piece of information, I think, for many of you. We got a notification from the county. So the way the sales tax works basically is New York collects sales tax. Then through a series of formulas, they distribute the sales tax to counties. Mm-hmm. Counties, in turn, have formulas in which they distribute it to cities and towns and villages. So basically, whatever happens to Columbia County sales tax directly impacts ours. So Columbia County very recently issued a press release saying that they're expecting to incur a 31% decline in sales tax May to mid-June versus year ago. This is apparently due to the fact that in 2020 and 21, because the COVID recovery was slower in New York City than it was in much other places of the state, non-New York City municipalities ended up getting sort of a bigger share of the sales tax pie during those years. But now that New York is recovering rapidly, they are doing adjustments, and that is apparently what is impacting Columbia County, as well as, I'm sure, all the other counties that aren't, you know, New York City. So to put it in perspective, you can read this as Columbia County or as the city of Hudson, because they do literally go hand in hand. It was up as much as 25% versus year ago, but currently they're projecting about 12% above last year. And if the trend continues, the full year may end up being only like 3 to 5% higher than year ago. That sounds alarming, but the good news is that in our budget, we budgeted $2.3 million, which was only a 2.1% increase versus a year ago. So all things being equal, should be able to completely reach that number. But obviously, we're going to be monitoring that very closely. And as soon as I get the next quarter sales number, I'll let everybody know. These numbers are actually not updated from last time because I haven't received any additional payments yet. I assume by next month, I will probably have the second quarter sales tax, and may or may not have the second payment of your tax, although it usually comes like September. And then lastly, just in terms of operational issues, last time we spoke, our current software vendor is going to present its new software solutions to the tech committee. They did that. There were some great questions to follow up. We actually have a follow-up meeting with the tech committee chair, Ryan Wallace, and the vendor on this Friday afternoon. We've been providing an updated pricing quote as well as some information in terms of, you know, what components are ready to go, what ones are, how we might be able to, you know, switch one at a time, like maybe move to the GL software first, but not collections, because collections need, you know, quarterly payment, but the ability to collect quarterly, need the ability to allow our residents to enter into a payment plan for linked taxes. And we've been assured that all of those things are going to be ported over from the old software. But at this point, it's just a case of figuring out what the timing is and what that means in terms of what it should look like. So by next month, I should definitely have some for updates on that information for you as well. And that is all I have.
Heather, did our two property sales close?
I have no idea. As far as I know, we haven't received checks for them.
Oh.
So I'm not involved in the actual closing. That's the attorneys that deal with that. But we should have gotten something. We should have gotten checks from them. And as far as I believe, I don't think we've gotten revenue from either of those yet.
Okay, thank you. Council members, Theo.
Good evening, Heather.
Hi, Theo.
I just had a couple questions about the short-term rentals. I saw that a listing went up for bookkeeping and clerical position. It's great that, and we're short staff, so it's great that you'll be getting some help. I'm just wondering if that bookkeeping position will be assisting the licensing of short-term rentals?
You know, that's a great question. The problem is that this office always had two staffers. And since the time that I've come on board, they've added lodging tax, which is a quarterly tax collection, registration, reconciliation of all those accounts. And we were able to do that without adding headcount. When you add the compliance component, and clearly that has not been our big priority because we've been so short-staffed, it's literally one person in the office and has been since August of 2019, besides me. It's a real issue. And I honestly do not know if my office has the bandwidth to add, even though the law is written that says it's my office's responsibility, it doesn't necessarily mean that my staff has the bandwidth to take that on. I haven't been able to spend a whole lot of time even thinking about it because of all the, you know, end of year reporting requirements and trying to get a new staffer in and trying to make sure my current staffer doesn't leave because she's so overwhelmed. But I did actually, Michelle Trullo, you know, our housing director, actually reached out to me a little while ago asking about, like, can we talk about it and see what worked. And I actually just emailed her today and I said, sorry, I haven't been able to get back to you, but I definitely want to have this conversation and just let me get sort of these final, you know, state reporting requirements off of our plate and hopefully get, you know, a new bookkeeper in. And then let's definitely tackle how we've got to go into this. So that's the answer I have for you now.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for that additional context. I'm just wondering if in that case it might make sense just to add a line in the job listing about potential experience or like an expectation of helping collect the short-term rental tax. I know there's a lot there already, but I don't know, just having a line in the Indeed listing outlining that expectation as well?
Well, we are constrained by how we describe the job by how civil service describes the job.
Okay.
So even though I put it up on a public job board, I'm still constrained to using the civil service description for bookkeeper. And I confirmed that with them. So until we get that modified, I can't really add anything else. I will say for sure, in terms of the collection, that's not an issue. We've been doing that, and every candidate that's come in, I have sort of a long list of tasks that I share with them, and lodging tax collection, and registration, and reconciliation of those accounts is definitely part of this position, and part of the other position as well,
mm-hmm.
my office. Compliance is a thing that is still not sort of not included in any of the civil service job descriptions or in any of the union job descriptions for those two positions.
So just, I'm just trying to figure out like what the state of things are right now. Are you saying that we are not sending out any non-compliance notices at the current time?
We sent out one round, I'm going to say maybe in September of last year, and that was the last time we sent anything out having to do with compliance.
Is there any risk of, like, if we don't collect the taxes or issue a non-compliance form that they can claim, like, it's like a one-year, I don't know what the right term for it is, like, if it's outside of a window of collection, can they say your request for money is no longer valid?
Not based on my reading of the law.
Okay, yeah. Okay, last question. This is just, I'm trying to clear up all things short-term rental. How often do those registrations get updated with lodging reps?
Registration is annual for most people. So once you're registered, if you're continuing to operate, you register once a year, and that's from March 1st, March 31st, I'm almost positive. Because I think February, March, I'm almost positive it's March. Then we have intermittent people who will be first-time registrants, and that can happen throughout the year, and they register whenever they decide to open their Airbnb or their SDR, and their registration is prorated for that period of time until the following March, and then everybody is on a March, and an annual March re-registration for their certificate of occupancy.
Great, thank you for all the information.
Any other questions from council members?
Yeah, a question. Heather, I had a question regarding, you clarified some of it already, that most of those funding that we're seeking were going to be reimbursed for. Are we projected to be able to pay back the interest rate plus the fire truck money, since those are not being covered by grants? Was that pretty much, from what my understanding, that city's responsibility to pay this back?
Yeah, that's the interest is definitely the city's responsibility to pay back. So that is the cost associated with being able to borrow all this money so that we can fund these projects, since they are all reimbursable in terms of expenditures. So in other words, the city has to come out of pocket first, and they get reimbursed. So that's why I say you will see that money, the interest on that money in the 2023 budget, because we are responsible for paying it, and we'll have to figure out where we're going to find that money from.
It hasn't been planned for. It's still kind of pushed towards 2023 to figure out how to pay for that, or are we already kind of looking at budget items to see how we're doing, like, projected revenue-wise?
We have not started the 2023 budget process yet. It will be part of that analysis. We generally start that. The departments all have to have their budgets to the BDA by September 10th. So it won't be too far in the future when we start looking at that. And obviously, it's a pretty long budget process. You've got all the requests for expenditures, departments. You've got all the non-departmental expenses, which is as much as all the departments combined. When you think about things like health care and municipal insurance and compensation and all of those kinds of things. You know, and then obviously the other part of that is making revenue projections and then figuring out what your window is and how you're going to close that gap, whether it be cutting expenses or, you know, being more aggressive in your revenue assumptions or, you know, looking at your fund balance and determining how much of that costs to offset the, you know, the disparity between expenses and revenue. So that'll all be taken into consideration during this year's budget process.
So if I'm understanding correctly, so that's for the interest. What about the 1.08 million that we're spending on the ladder truck? Is that already been paid for?
No.
Or is that also going to be added on to future budgets?
Well, it's two different things. So there's a thing that's called a bond anticipation note. And what that is a one-year short-term borrowing. And as I said before, the reason why we could do something like that is that we don't need to borrow all $8 million because we're going to get, you know, $5+ million of that through grant reimbursements. So at the end of the day, we are going to be left with some amount of money that we're going to have to then transfer into a bond. So a bond is a long-term borrowing, and that is basically based on what's called the PPU for each project, which is the period of probable usefulness. And this is all codified in New York state law. They basically say, hey, I'm making up these numbers, so don't take me, you know, at my word, but they'll say, hey, a sewer project, that's good for 30 years. Hey, a fire truck, that's good for 10 years. Hey, you're building, you know, you're doing a water quality improvement, that's good for 25 years. Get to all of the amounts that are left over after the grants, all of those amounts will be rolled into a bond, and the bond amount will be based on the outstanding amounts, and then you'll go to market with that, like we did with the band. You'll hopefully, you know, sell the bonds and get competing, you know, bids for it. We go with the lowest bid, and that's going to tell us for the next weighted average, so let's say those were all true, so the weighted average of all those projects ends up being, let's say, 20 years. So we issue the band, the bond, the bonds for 20 years, whatever the market decides they want to bid for is going to tell the city what its principal interest payments are going to be for the next 20 years, and then we have to budget for that, but it's a knowable number, and one change that we've made is there are different ways that people can do it, and at this point we are pretty consistently just saying we want as close to a consistent number over the term of the bond, so you have a much more forecastable number for that particular piece of debt service, so it's going to be roughly the same amount every year. There are other places and other ways that may do it to forward the cost or to back end the cost, but neither of those are particularly good options unless you're flush with cash and you can, you know, forward, you know, pay more in the early years. But if you can do that, then you should just pay down more of the debt before you go into bond service, because why pay interest on that if, you know, that cash should pay it down. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it.
Great. I think the short answer is no, we don't have to pay it all next year. Vicki has a question.
Yes, hi Heather. Thank you for explaining this so well. It seems to me that parking tickets is a very consistent incoming stream, but I also feel we have not reached as a city our full potential. There are some malfunctioning meters. And I was wondering if you, I don't know if they check them periodically, they should, and who and how, all that, I really feel we need to have someone on the table to make that department. But if you see a dip in the revenue, do you notify, do you report like there's something off? Can you, what is your role in a way if you see a big figure that is off?
You know, I generally use this forum to report that information. I do not generally go directly to departments that have revenue projections and point out what's going on. I generally rely on you guys to do that. Not necessarily close to doing it. We don't really have too many departments. Parking tickets, probably really the only one that would be kind of relevant for, because they do have their own department. But again, you've got a department that collects parking tickets, so they're not going to have any visibility as to why there are more or less parking tickets, unless it's a collection rate issue. And then, you know, you've got the HPE side, or the parking enforcement officers, so they would probably be the people best capable of explaining why there might be a fluctuation in parking revenues, whether they're down in person, whether just everybody's behaving really well and not parking properly. We don't have any visibility to any of that, so.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you, Vicki. Any other questions from the council members? Malachi.
Yeah, actually, maybe the chief can answer this, but you're talking about the fire truck. Were we able to sell the old fire truck?
I think they're trying to.
Oh, they're still in the process
of
that? Okay.
Yeah.
Not only are they trying to, but I believe we also put in an estimate of getting revenue from that to help offset the budget.
Right.
So we do have an estimate. We do have a budget assumption that we will get some money from the sale of the old fire truck, and that is built into the 2022 budget.
It's not a lot relative to the price.
Right. Yeah.
The
used fire truck market.
Yeah. Well, actually, some small little municipalities are happy to have, you know, something. Any other questions from council members? If not, the public. I mean, if not, comma, the public? Question mark.
Question.
Oh, I didn't call on you actually yet.
Oh.
I was just looking here. Sorry. Go ahead.
I also have a question about short-term rentals. I went on Airbnb a couple of months ago, typed in Hudson, and over 500 units came up for rent.
But they don't all
reflect
Hudson.
Thank you. And I poked around a little bit, and sure enough, some of them looked like they were in Greenport, some were in Catskill. But still, 500 is a big number. The listing on your website of all the registered short-term rentals is 100 or 102 thereabouts. And many of those have multiple rooms, I understand. I guess I'm wondering, how do we know that every Airbnb that is in Hudson that's listed on their website available is actually registered? I mean, who's enforcing or making sure that these people are registered?
That's exactly what Lodging Res does. They go through each of those. I'm telling you because I know the answer, okay?
Why can't she tell me? She's the one.
No, actually, she's.
Wrong.
No, you're wrong.
We did that.
First of all, because both of us, we've talked to Lodging Res,
so
we know how it works.
In-house. Is that correct?
Excuse me?
Let's get the answer out.
Is that not done in house?
No, it is not done in-house. Lodging Revs looks at every
list.
Lodging Revs, who is the provider, don't calm down and wait for your answer.
Explain who they are.
No.
Lodging Revs is a division of Moody Revs, and it's like a municipal accounting software that outsources into Lodging Revs and specifically looks at short-term rentals, registers them. We send a list of short-term rentals to Lodging Revs who monitor the sites using their software and report back to the treasurer's office for a list of non-compliant addresses. Is that more or less it, right? Okay.
Yep, that's
yeah.
it.
I would also add that our lodging tax collection provider also has done and continues to offer to do, they will actually do a live survey of who's registered. They go in, they access assessment rules and cross-collate.
Right.
And so the last time we did that was very successful. They found, I think, a grand total of, 31 properties that listed, but were not registered, and so we went after those. And they have offered to do that again and again. You know, unfortunately, just bandwidth in my office, we haven't had a chance to take them up on it yet. But as soon as we're out of the hole with all of this financial reporting, that's definitely going to be my next step.
Yeah. it's good for people to know how it works.
Yeah.
You know, just to get it out.
Absolutely. Thank you, Heather.
Lodging Rev charges us for that service, right?
Correct.
And we're happy with them? Do we know they're on it?
They're good.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Onward to Chief Moore, who I see waiting anxiously to participate.
Hello, everybody. Can you hear me, Tom?
Yes, we can.
Happy summer, aldermen, alders from the Wells of Justice. We have...
Chief Council, not alder.
Well, we got a lot to report tonight, so
okay.
I'll try to get through it as fast as possible. The monthly mandatory inspection of the body cameras was done, a little over 100 randomized samples of body collection. That report was done with no instances of misconduct. That report was forwarded per the resolution to the mayor. I think I gave a copy to Tom. We have the monthly activity report pursuant to Section 9 of the Park Committee Executive Order. And we saw for the month of June, we had 3 instances of use of force. In the instances, there was no violation of the Executive Order duty to report. Over the month of June, we had 44 arrests. 63 total charges levied. The police department answered 11 instances of emotionally disturbed people, and we broke our chain of not having any drug overdoses. In June, we had 2 drug overdoses, and in both instances, the officers administered Narcan. I've emailed the monthly report to all the alders for your review. If there's any questions, certainly send it my way. Then, of course, this is the end of the quarter, and one of the emphasis of the quarterly reporting is the racial division, the breakdown of traffic enforcement by ethnicity. So I've also emailed that to all the alders. We see over the last 3 months, 278 tickets issued, and the ethnicity of people issued tickets breaks along our reported by census population demographics, with 70% of the tickets issued to people who identified as Caucasian, 21% identified as Black or African American, 1.4% as Asian or Pacific Islander, and 7% as other. So there's no abnormalities. Every single ticket that was issued over the quarter has been emailed, you know, description has been emailed to you for you to review the different range of tickets. We had quite a June. Police department had a good June, a busy June. I'd like to first start off and say that our Pride Parade on June 4th and the Flag Day Parade on June 11th were quite successful. Very few instances, two very successful and safe events. On the 10th, that was quite a day for the department. We had, after a lengthy trial and preparation, we had the successful conviction of Daquan Powell, which is starting almost wrapped up with all the violence of who's convicted of murder. And this nearly wraps up all the pending incidents from 2017 that year, and with only one trial pending. On that same day, June 10th, the officers assisted by state police and sheriff's units were able to catch attempted murder suspect as he tried to flee through the city. So that was a busy day. On the 15th, we had 2 simultaneous trials going on. We had a successful conviction of a weapons assault trial, known as the Edmonds case, and we were very satisfied that we were prepared and presented a good case there. So two very significant jury trial cases ended up in convictions. So we're very thankful for the hard work put in by the officers and detectives. On the 21st of June, HPD officers underwent extensive DWI advanced training from the Department of Criminal Justice Services. On the 29th, we met with representatives from the Hudson Royals Cricket Club, which we were glad to present with a $1,000 check plate for them to buy some necessary equipment. And we asked people to turn out on Saturday to the high school to watch the cricket tournament. Other than that, that's all I have to report, Tom, at this moment.
Thank you, Chief. Council members, questions? Anyone online with questions? Council members?
Yes, I do. Hold on a second.
Is that Vicky? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Vicky.
Can I? Hi, Chief.
Hi.
I didn't have the chance to ask you that question after I saw the report. I noticed there are quite a lot of tickets for going through stop signs without stopping. Do you think it's certain stop signs that you see recurrences of that, or it's all over the city?
I'll check and I'll double check, but I think that they're pretty randomized. I don't think we were sitting on one or two intersections. I think those tickets were spread over the city.
Okay, I'm just saying in your historically, are there certain areas where the stop signs are not followed, you know? That's my question.
I don't understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, from what you see in the past, are there certain stop signs that the you know, passengers do not slow down on them, or is it like, you know, it doesn't matter where they are?
We did search citizen complaints and usually respond to them, most recently up in the boulevards. So, you know, like, we'll respond if we get the certain number of reports that people are going through the intersections. But I think when we break down the data from the border, you're going to see that it's all over the city.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Any other council members with questions?
Go
ahead, Theo. Gentlemen, make a decision.
just a question. This is just like a broad question, just like going forward. For all these stops, is there like, obviously the, it gets written in the report, like the address that's happened, but is there like any way of like applying this to a GIS map or anything like that? Is the data in a format? I don't know, what like with the body cameras, I know that they come with GPS data within them. I'm just wondering if any locational data is being kept besides just within like the address information within the report.
Address of the violation or address of the offender?
Address the violation.
I don't believe so. A lot of times we could correlate it to the radio data because the guys were pulling the data from a certain location. So with a little legwork, you could probably localize, you know, calls and the activity.
I'm just wondering if it's like something that's already being stored or something that would have to like have a program on top of it to pull location data. But you just answered.
Thank you, Theo.
Theo, just looking here.
The email that it sent out has some location data on it.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, so, for example, like, for body cameras, like, log the GPS location of the incident, or if there's, like, a call to the siren, or if it, like, automatically gets logged in a way that's, like, easily queryable, like, versus, like, having to download an Excel spreadsheet or manually re-input the data from a PDF to then replicate the results.
You want
to
see a heat map.
See a heat map or see GPS, like GIS, anything like that, in the same way that any other data would. But that's just nerdy stuff.
The report you see is all manually inputted.
Yep.
So we don't have like a contract, data system yet.
Yeah.
Although we are exploring new PRSs and that might, you know, be a little more easier than the system we've had for the last 20 years now. So,
Chief, what's a PRS? Police report.
Oh, I'm sorry. Police reporting system. Electronic blotter. Cool. Police reporting system.
Cool. Thank you.
Yep. Sorry about the jargon.
Malachi, do you have a question?
Yeah, just in regards to this individual who was released today. I mean, I got a couple of notices of people asking me about the man that got out. Is there any anything you could speak on about that, Chief? Just to comfort people.
Yeah, I was hoping the newspapers asked me about this. Okay, so you got a parolee who was convicted of a brutal murder, and he's released to the area. You know, what can you do? So what's happened is every member of the department is familiar with him at the patrol briefings. You know, they're aware of what's going on, only to have our patrolmen have an understanding and be able to recognize him and be aware of their community is the only way to really notch it up beyond what the parole board is, you know, also doing with him. So yes, it's a concern. There's a lot of parolees released in the area, but in our morning briefings, we have a patrol book and we go over any significant information that might affect the public. So it's just about police patrol awareness.
Any other questions from council members? Any questions from the public? Okay, Bill. Make them short.
Yeah. What does that mean?
It means don't go on forever.
Forever. Yeah, I always want to. And I'm wondering if the commissioner is available tonight. Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know if he's logged on or not. Bill.
He does not seem to be on.
No, he's not here.
There is no requirement for the commissioner.
No, I totally understand that. It seems like he's never logged on. Because I have a question for him, because I think that, and you can correct me, he's the person with the power to create a, quote, safe zone, like was done in front of the maker, and he has the power to apparently remove parking meters. Is that correct? Bill?
I don't hear anything. Excuse me?
Oh, try it again, Bill.
Can you hear me?
I can't hear anything.
Can you hear me?
Officer Nelson, you back? Get a phone call by
one. There's that playing his games again. Oh, I can't hear Billy Houston. I don't have to speak to him. I won't answer any of his questions. Hello, Ed.
I hear something. It's garbled. Who's talking?
All right, what's the question? Like, this is that a question.
Can you hear me, Ed?
The question.
No, I can't hear a thing.
Okay, the question.
The question is a good question about who has the power to issue and take away parking meters and to issue safe zones in front of businesses, which I think is like a really good question.
Well, I don't know what a safe zone is.
I think you're referring. It was when we had the meeting about the metered zone. That the loading zone in front of the maker, right?
I think it's is it section 305 of the charter that empowers the police commissioner to regulate traffic?
Right.
I think that's what we're talking about here. I'm sorry, you can't hear that clearly.
No. He has the power to regulate traffic.
I believe the alders too can have discussions about parking, and they can debate it, and also institute certain things to regulate traffic.
Does the
I, on the other hand, enforce traffic.
Yeah. Ed, in the code, does it say that the police commissioner has the power to remove parking meters?
He just said it. He did.
Yes.
I think if that's included under regulating traffic, yeah.
You think or you know?
Oh, come on, Bill, not this.
But it's not.
Why am I speaking to this man?
There we go.
Who is this person? Who is this person?
I'm a member of the public, Ed.
Why is he even there?
That's the way you're going to obstruct him.
There's no satisfying this person with any answers.
So, Ed,
why are we wasting our time?
Is there any paperwork?
1,000 emails from
involved.
Somebody who wants to know about a parking meter. I just reported a month full of
activity.
Murder convictions,
oh my God.
Assaults, And this man's asking about a traffic meter, a parking meter.
Okay, I'll move on to my second question for you.
Second question, please.
Last month you told us that you hired a full-time meter enforcer. Is that correct? I can't hear you.
There's a new parking enforcement officer. His name's Dave Komposky, and he just started.
Komposky, and you, HPD hired him. Is that correct?
The city hired him.
What department hired him? The police department hired the parking enforcer. He works for the police department, right?
I think Kamal may have tried to say something.
Kamal, did you want
to sleep? Repeat that, Mayor.
What did you say, Kamal?
Mr. Mayor? I agree with the chief. Like, this isn't a courtroom thing.
I know.
I don't know what's going on.
And why are you getting involved, Mayor? What are you?
Okay, Bill. Bill, this is over. Please sit down. Sit down, Bill.
Who hired the meter?
Okay. Do you really want me to ask someone to remove you?
What department hired him? What department?
What's the difference, Bill?
What do you mean, what's the difference? He doesn't work for it. He doesn't work for the code enforcement office.
That's the end question. What
question? I want to know what the process was of hiring the officer.
What's the point of this?
I'll get to it.
Go to the end right now.
If you answer the question, it would move right along.
No.
Probably the police department. That's called the parking enforcement. So then what's the end question? So that you can get your answer.
Yeah.
Because that's all that they want, you to get to your question so that they can give you an answer.
Is this new officer from the city of Hudson, does he live in the city of Hudson?
Yes, he does.
He does. So you have a preference for hiring the city of Hudson, is that correct?
Hey, listen, I'm done answering any questions from you. Have a good night.
Thank you, Bill. Okay, moving right along. Thank you, Chief. We already covered other possibilities. Okay.
Hey, Tom.
And who is that?
That's Dominic.
Oh, Dominic. Go ahead, Dominic.
Yeah, hey. I'm sorry I'm not there, but just to let you know, it is very mumble with that sound, that I'm hearing.
Okay.
It's echoing together.
Ah.
For some reason, so it is very hard to hear.
Does somebody have their computer on to this? I mean, that could do it if you're in the room here with a computer. No?
No.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Dominic, for letting us know that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chief Moore. And lastly, the last report, Rob Perry. Rob?
How are you?
Oh, okay. Are you?
You ready, Rob?
Yeah, I'm ready. Can you hear?
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. So let me do the share screen. And sharing. Okay. So, septage for the month of May was $44,780. This is how it goes. The revenues for the year are bell curve, and the highest months are in the summer months, so it helps get our annual revenue forecast on track. And just to follow up, I am a department head that does track revenues throughout the year and tries to make sure where we are, and if something's not right, try to figure out what's wrong with it. We had our annual inspection, which you can see is just a cover letter from the DEC, and that took place letter's June 30th, it took place in May. The water treatment plant was, wastewater treatment plant was found to be well maintained, operated, and as such, the department has assigned an overall satisfactory rating of this inspection. So it was like that. We always like to get a nice letter from the DEC. It references some follow-ups. F is for follow-up, not for fail. And usually there's a half dozen operational questions based on processes and various chemicals and so forth. And you get these kind of questions every year. There's nothing really out of the ordinary with it. It's just a question for a follow-up. Let's see, with the Front Street project, we are underway. So just gives you an idea of how large this pipe is. 48 inches in diameter. It's going about 15 to 20 feet deep. these structures, they actually, the lip on top of these structures, they actually set on top of each other. So some of these pipe will be about 15 to 20 feet deep. It's a pretty massive undertaking. The blue guy here is a trench box, and that straddles the pipe so that way the contractors can work in there safely because they are incredibly deep. We also have, show you here, this is one of the, this black circle is one of the structures actually in place. It's a little difficult to see, but let me just zoom in on it. Anyway, that's what it is. You're welcome to come down to Front Street and see it in real, if you'd like to. Part of the project, we had a conflict with a 12-inch water main, so we actually had to sever the water main and cap it. But at that point, once they came through, they reconnected it. So these are the types of things. You know, you don't know 100% where everything is when you're designing it, and we refer to this as latent discovery. Once you start excavating, we find all sorts of things that we didn't anticipate, and you find a way to work around it, and you move on. Moving on to the water department, we had our biannual inspection of the Churchtown Dam, and this is from one of the engineers there, and effectively condition rating, no deficiencies noted, obviously good news as well. And they always have to see this cautionary tale about basic maintenance, which we do, so that's good news as well. Two good letters from DEC in 1 month is almost too much to ask for, but we're happy to have it. We did conduct hydrant flushing last month, so there was no issues with that. The Washington Street Water Main Project. So this is part of the lead service. After the water main was put into service, so we had to make the new copper services to replace those houses. About half the houses had lead services. And what you have is a directional bore. The there's rods that come in through the back. It's hydraulic, and it turns it and pushes it, not only through the ground, but also through the foundation of the house. It'll cut through stone, brick, concrete, and then they sleeve the new service through it and attach it to the main. These are the rods, so they're like 3-foot sections. As they go in, they replace them at another section and keep going. So this project is, as far as the infrastructure portion, is now complete. What is left is final restoration, which is basically taking out the stone that's on the top, going down about 6 inches, and then replacing that with 6 inches of blacktop. Those patches will stay there for a year, and then next season, when we do our CHIPS paving project, we'll mill down a couple of inches and put a new top coat on. We just like to have these construction projects of this significance. It's okay to have cars drive on it for a year, but if it has a chance to settle and compact better, we can put some temporary patches on it over the year, and then that makes the final product a much better product. So that's that. We also, as far as water, we had our annual health inspection from the County Health Department on June 23rd, so we haven't received their report yet, but everything did seem favorable. They actually had somebody with the state with them this year. They wanted to go out and see the reservoir and our intake system because they're working on some watershed protection rules, and they wanted to get some input from various water systems. So that was a full day of excitement. Moving on to DPW stuff, we did our biannual auction equipment, so all of the pieces sold, I think there were 13 or so. We received about $5,300 in revenue. It's not a surprise, most of the vehicles, the engines are shot, transmissions are shot, the frames are shot. It's little more than scrap value. They'll buy them, they'll cut out the catalytic converters, it's just basically guys who tinker and scrap, and they'll bring it to various scrapyards by material. So the vehicles stay in service a lot longer than they should, and so they basically have no value at the end of their life. Just to kind of segue here, this truck is, I think, 15 years old. We took the bed off because we know we're going to have to rely on it for a couple more years of service, and we don't have anything to fill it with, replace it with. So they're just taking apart and they're doing some sealant on it and grading down the rust and just making it, helping the frame of the thing to last a couple more years. We received the portable radar sign. So that was something that it's pretty simple and straightforward to put together. We put it on the northeast side of Oakdale, I guess, for traffic coming from Fairview Avenue. There's intended to have a permanent sign there in the future. We don't have the time to install it right now. You need to get utility locates. There's a lot going on. But this will satisfy the serve, for that, at least for the near future while the kids are at Oakdale. So that is in place right now. The portal radar sign, pull of signs. Speed limit signs have been installed on the north side of Union Street. That happened late last week. And the ones on the south side, the anchors are in. We put the concrete grout in today. So once that sets up, we'll install the signs on the south side sometime this week, and that project will be complete. The new barricade shed, which is something we started over the wintertime. The new garage door has been installed. It's a light-duty door. It's not insulated because the building isn't heated itself. And then we finished the installation of the ABM rubber roof. So that project is, just need to paint it and stain it so that it'll last. Otherwise, that project's done. Part of the NYPA light conversion is what to do with the Warren Street lights. So I was on vacation in Maine last week or 2 weeks ago. And this is something similar to what we have on Warren Street now. So it gives you an idea of how the configuration changes for an LED bulb. And you can see, it's got that dark sky thing. So the light goes directly down and it's got, pretty good coverage. And this one's a little cooler than some lights, but you can change the style of the LED depending on if you want it to a warmer color or not. The hall roof, that started early last week. So what happened is we had to take off, there's actually three layers of roof on there. And so the contractor had to remove all of that. There was, we didn't know what's underneath there, so that resulted in a $6,000 change order. The original contract was for about $40,000. So they removed all this extra material. Here you can see going down to the original subroof, and then subroof gets, they remove this stuff, but they put a new decking on it, which is, OSB, I believe. And then after that, the EPDM, which is the rubber membrane, gets put on top. So we did have more than we material removed than we had budgeted for. So, but the good news is we also were going to try and, we had a line item, because we weren't sure what the condition of the skylight was going to be, and it was in better condition than we thought, so we actually got about $5,100 credit that we didn't need to do that. So the net is about $900 more than what we originally contracted for. So it is what it is. Shared street applications are in. The police reviewed them last week. I believe Alex marked out many of them last night and is going to finish doing some tonight. So given that information, we reached to our neighbors in Greenmore, and the blocks will be going out tomorrow at 0700. So wakey-wakey, eggs-a-bakey, you're going to hear some noise in the morning. But it shouldn't take that long. It's only 20 spots this time. And I believe they're going to plant the planters, put the greens and the planters on location, which is fine for us. It's easier to transfer transport that way. They've also been doing some maintenance on those. So we should be up and running, I would say tomorrow, maybe the next day. It's nowhere near as big a project as it was last year or 2 years ago, whenever we started this. Promenade Hill. So, this is all set for a new concrete walkway to go from the Bluestone steps over to the playground. There was an underground electrical structure that's actually the primary power that feeds the old part of the city. It was in pretty rough shape, so National Grid put a new box to protect it and make it a little safer down there. So we'll backfill around it with materials. The bluestone, this is along the entrance to the central plaza, if you will. So these are the borders, and then the little block guys here will go in. You can see some of the landscape, more of the landscaping is in. So that's starting to take, starting to look more like a park. And this is from today. They're working on the central plaza itself.
Nice.
It's stonework. It's all, these guys are they're craftsmen. So it does take a while. Every one of these has to be kind of measured and put in place. Once they're all together, then they have to put the sand in and tighten everything up. But it is getting near completion. What we have left are, some more plantings have to get done. This has to get finished, obviously. The approach, the entrance has to have its stones installed. We have to coordinate with National Grid to get the streetlights on once the plaza's all set and tightened up, because Grid's going to need to get in there with some equipment. And, we can't drive over this right now, obviously. So that's, it's getting closer. The problem's been all along is the railings a bunch of them have been fabricated. We haven't received them yet, but they're concerned about how to transport them, because I guess they're in long sections and they don't want them to get tweaked or bent in transport, but that's on the contractor and the manufacturer to figure out. Otherwise, everything else is progressing pretty well. As far as the Ferry Street Bridge is concerned, for all intents and purposes, the final, design is complete. The Department of Transportation really doesn't have any significant comments at this point. We are waiting for National Grid to get the utility agreement from Amtrak, because National Grid has to move utilities on the Amtrak property. And so you've got these two monstrous bureaucratic, leviathans that are duking it out with each other. Once the permit is in place, then we can make an application for a railroad permit. And once we have a railroad permit, then we can request permission to advertise for construction. And that final approval needs to come from the Department of Transportation. So, we're close, but we've kind of been as close as we've been for the last 2 or 3 months. We do keep putting pressure on Amtrak and National Grid. The fact that they have our signed agreement and they have the escrow payment for their force accounts, should hopefully finally let them know that we're serious about advancing this project. But they are what they are. They're two massive corporations. That's all I have.
Thank you, Rob. Council members, Theo.
Hi, Rob. I just had a question, if there's any update on the repaving project on 3rd Street. I guess I apologize if I missed any communication since, but I think the last we heard was maybe like a month ago or so that the other section was going to get repaved. And I just wondering if there's any update on the timeline.
Yeah, we put it on the schedule. We think we're ready to go. And then all of a sudden, if a couple guys calling sick, or a lot of times the weather, because it really needs to be 3 consecutive days with pretty good weather. We can't have any rain while we're doing it, because we don't want water to get in between the the layers. Mm-hmm. So it's just been unfortunately this is construction business. We're gonna try and do it again this week. It's on the schedule for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But we don't know what kind of weather we're going to get on Wednesday. Hopefully, it comes through quickly, and then we can start doing some work.
So I'm trying to remember your presentation. So the sub base was poured, and then the base is what's exposed right now.
No. The what's on the one lane is everything but the top coat. So
yeah.
The sub base, which is the stone 2 feet of stone with various layers of fabric, and there's about 6 inches of base and 2 inches of binder. So it just needs the 2-inch top coat. But we'll do the top coat once the other side is ready, because you wanna have those two done at the same time, so that way they can bind together and make one solid cap.
Okay. You said, is there any like structural, like any risk to the structural integrity by having that, you know, that everything but the surface exposed, you know, for the amount of time?
No, not really.
Okay.
No. The top coat is really just a heavy, heavy seal. It just keeps everything, because the aggregate is much smaller, so it makes it much more difficult for water to get down into it. But right now, the water is going to go through the binder and it'll go through the sub base and it'll go down to the ground. You know, we just don't want that to happen during the winter time when there's a freeze.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other council members? Questions? Nothing? Okay, I think we'll proceed.
Public?
No, I think we're going to, there's no obligation to have public questioning. And
all right, I'll just ask a quick question.
That's all right. We're not going to have it answered.
Hey, Rob.
Amen.
Sorry, Bill. Bill, do you want me to?
I tried to send you some pictures of the curb ramps in my neighborhood that Paula Russo laid down about November of last year for the CHIPS program. You're aware of that? Thanks, Rob. You're a real help.
Bill, this is not a court of law. You don't proceed that way. If you have a fine... No, you're not. You're kind of trying to build...
You guys know, maybe he's listening or not. Paula Russo was hired for the CHIPS program.
Why don't you save this for the general new business?
All these people here should know this.
Write to them.
Go to the corner at 6th and State where I live. Go on the west, southwest corner and look at the new pad that Paula Russo laid down in November. Cracks all over. You think Rob Perry cares? You think there's a guarantee in that contract to make sure that this stuff doesn't happen? It's absurd.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Nothing about it.
Thank you.
He doesn't even answer questions. So nobody is accountable to no one.
Yeah.
I think it's a really valuable observation.
Right.
It's a really valuable observation, and like I just think that like it's really important to bring up. I would just say that like when you're asking it, there's just a way to say like, you know, I noticed some cracks in this place, and you know, if you ask the question or sort of made the observation, I think, you know, everyone benefits from the observation that you're making. I think that if you just said it, you know, just ask a question, I think like have a much better conversation.
Or he could just reply to my emails and get it done. That's not expected of a minimum.
Yeah.
Delivery.
Yeah, just like keeping it to one question, or even just like saying an observation about the, you know, the,
it doesn't work, dude. It doesn't work. He obfuscates. He goes the other way. It's nonsense.
I
appreciate the comment.
It's a good observation. Thanks for doing it. Everything's copacetic.
Yeah.
Next month, I'll give you an update and see if the cracks are still there.
Okay. Moving right along, we have one resolution. It's a simple one. It's a Commissioner of Deeds. And I need an introduction and a second by Sir Dewan and Theo, and I will get you to sign it right now since it's the end of the night. A reminder that the laws, we have two laws on our desks, and one of them is ready to be voted on next week, and that's the redistricting law. Now, I'd like to open up to the council first for any new business or almost. Any old business or new business? Council members, is there anything you'd like to...
Maybe just a reminder about Thursday's special meeting.
Oh, good idea, Dominic. That's right, Thursday at 6 p.m. right here. It'll be a hybrid meeting. And the subject, thank you, Theo, the subject is the truck study. And we've invited the mayor as well as the 5 supervisors. D.D. Barrett was invited, but declined to attend. That's Thursday. So if you're interested in hearing more about the truck study or what can be done, please attend. And again, it's a hybrid meeting. You can be here or at home. Council members, anything else?
Did the assembly person give a reason as to why she was declining, or just
you'd have to ask. Unfortunately, Margaret's not here. Margaret is the one who approached her. You know, this is a meeting called by three members of the council. So they were Margaret at Margaret's instigation. I don't mean that. I mean her initiative, I should say. And I think she tried to get Assemblywoman Barrett to attend, but I think someone from her office might attend. I'm not sure about that. Yes, sir.
It might be a really basic question, but maybe it's just good to air it out. But I saw in an email there was alternate routes proposed and sent to us.
Oh, you. I'm sorry.
Where could we find those alternate routes in preparation?
Okay, I will send out the truck study. The truck study has everything. It has 12 alternate routes.
Okay, and will it be posted to the special meeting?
I think we already did that. Let me
check.
Can you check right now?
That information is all available on the website.
Yeah.
I'm just shaking your head. Centralizing information might be nice just to have it.
Yep.
Agenda.
Michael, can I count on you, Michael, to do that?
Yeah, cool.
I know you're so underworked.
Yeah. I saw the petition.
Oh, that was in there? Okay, yeah, I'll make sure it's posted so that everybody knows. Because, again, a reminder, a special meeting has to stay within the topic, you know, so we're not going to be talking about other things that may be related to this but aren't part of this.
It's all connected.
I know, in theory, the world is all connected, but yeah, the subject of this meeting is not. Anything else from, did I say it already, council members? No.
Yeah.
Are you going to do that, Michael? Post that to the...
Yeah, thank you.
The public, any final comments or questions? I don't see any hands. Oh, wait, I just saw a hand. Okay. Go ahead.
If you flipped around Hudson long enough, it's pretty obvious that there's a problem, serious lack of code enforcement as to everything from garbage to weeds, all sorts of things. It's pretty obvious that Craig Hay just doesn't have the time to do what's in the code and what this department is supposed to do. And it seems odd to me that he's not required to be at this meeting to tell us what's going on. I know he gives a report to the mayor every month on an 8x11 piece of paper. I don't even think they have to sit down and talk. But it seems to me that every department head, code enforcement included, should have a report for all your people, for all the public, and you should be accountable, and you should be able to ask them questions. It's no surprise to me that there's a big code enforcement problem in this town, and Craig Hay doesn't have to appear at common council meetings. Thank you.
You're welcome. And let me point out, the other department heads don't technically have to appear either. They do it...
Craig's the only one that's not here.
Okay, and he doesn't have to be here. If you would like to see a charter revision that requires him to attend, that's something you could talk to your your council members about. But
there is no requirement
for the... I think I've told this before, Bill. We are not the executive branch. We don't control the employees of the city.
Why is Craig the only one that's not here consistently?
Because he doesn't...
He doesn't want to.
He hasn't been asked to, and we haven't asked him to.
You asked all the others, and they said, sure, I'll show up.
Well, it's been tradition that they come to meetings, correct.
But not code enforcement.
Correct.
Because they never wanted to, or they never had to?
I don't know. I don't know the complete...
This doesn't make any sense, guys.
Well, a lot of things don't make sense, Bill. But thank you for your comment.
Too many code enforcement problems.
Well, you know, you can't...
He said he can just put his report on a piece of paper. Right?
Where else should he put it?
How about on the screen or in front of everybody?
Okay.
Seems reasonable and logical.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Do I have...
Motion to adjourn.
There's one. A second. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you all for coming tonight. See you on Thursday for our special meeting.
Is that all?